What's up, everybody? My name is Mike Lee, and I'd like to welcome you to the Mind Shift Lab. Each episode will bring you a guest to share exercises, strategies, and mindsets to help you create an internal shift that drives external results in business, the arts, sports, and life. Today, we're diving in with J.P. Clark. A Florida native, J.P. played collegiate basketball at Flagler College for his father, Bo Clark, who coached at Flagler for 31 seasons. Throughout his coaching career, JP has focused on player development, helping players maximize their talents and develop their potential. He has worked with a number of NBA All-Stars and Hall of Fame players, from Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, JJ Redick, Jamal Crawford, to Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Pat Beverley, Kevin Garnett, Rajon Rondo, and Paul Pierce. JP, so good to see you today. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Great to see you, Mike. Happy to be here and excited to be part of it.
So let's dive into your story a little bit. How did you go from playing D2 college basketball to getting on staff with the Celtics?
Yeah, so like you said, I played basketball for my dad at Flagler College. Come from a coaching family. My grandpa coached at UCF, dad coached at Flagler. So went through that process. My first year out, I was actually my dad's assistant for a year at Flagler. From there, I went to Colgate University in New York, was director of basketball operations up there. That was a good experience under Emmett Davis. From there, I wanted to get my master's. UCF had a sports leadership and coaching program. So I applied for that. I got into that. I was able to meet with their coach at the time, Donnie Jones, and I got a chance to be a graduate assistant with Donnie Jones while also being in the sports leadership and coaching master's program. So at the time at UCF, there was an assistant there named Brendan Sir. And Brendan Sir is a longtime NBA assistant, was in the NBA for almost 30 years. A lot of people know him with Coaching U Live, also was an assistant on the back-to-back world champions Detroit Pistons back in their heyday. So he's very, very good person, and he's just very well connected in the NBA. So he was gracious enough with his time to really give me some time with him and build a relationship with me. So long story short is Austin Rivers was a freshman at Duke, and he declared for the draft, and he wanted someone to handle his development locally or in the state of Florida. So David Falk, who was Michael Jordan's agent for a long, long time, still an agent to this day, contacted Brendan Sir and said, hey, you know, do you have anybody in mind that could work with Austin? So this was my second year at UCF at the time. I was now assistant director of basketball operations. And Brendan connected the dots. So Brendan set it up with David Falk, Austin, Doc Rivers. David Falk decided to give me a shot. I'd never worked with an NBA player at that time. I was probably 22, 23. So it was a crash course for me, 6-8 weeks of just like studying Austin's game, getting ready for that. And we started the draft training process at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, in probably late April to early May. Went for about 6 or 8 weeks, went well. Brendan was a big help with that. And then, you know, I just went back to UCF and I was preparing for, you know, next season. At this time, it was August. Austin got drafted 10th by the New Orleans Pelicans. And then lo and behold, I get a call from Kevin Eastman. I got to know Kevin Eastman through volunteering at Coaching U Live with Brendan Sir. And Kevin said, hey, you know, Doc really liked your work with Austin. You know, would you have any interest being with the Celtics? And I was like, yeah. And so he's like, well, let me explain it. You know, we have a chance to bring someone on as in a dual role with the Celtics and then their G League team. It was the D League at that time, but it's now the G League. And that's the main Red Claws. So, yeah, it ended up working out. It was an amazing experience. And so that year I was an assistant with the main Red Claws. And then like preseason, I was with the Celtics. And then the G League was only 3 or 4 months at that time. So then once the season ended, I was back with Boston. So, yeah. And then 8 years later, you know, it's been an awesome NBA ride. So, but that's kind of the story.
Yeah, I think it's such a great example of you never know what life is preparing you for, right? And I'm going to make an assumption here, but I'm assuming that as a player, you never reached the pinnacle of where you thought that you were trying to get to. I'm assuming as a kid growing up in high school, you wanted to play at the Dukes or the Kansases or the North Carolinas, and then you had a great experience, I'm sure, playing for your dad, but you're a guy that probably had to put in a massive amount of work and develop a really high skill level just to play at the level that you played at.
Without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, just coming from a basketball family, I mean, it was just how we grew up. I mean, every day you're practicing, every day you want to get better, you want to play at the highest level. And, you know, just some of us aren't good enough. You know, I had a few injuries here and there, but at the bottom of the line, you're just not good enough to go to the next level. And I think I was fortunate in that regard, coming from a coaching family, kind of knowing early on, you know, in my career, in my life, that I probably wanted to coach, seeing my dad do it, having talks with my grandpa. So actually my first year at Flagler, I actually tore I hurt my knee my freshman year, but my senior year in college playing for my dad, I hurt my hamstring. And it had been kind of a tumultuous, injury situation here and there. So my senior year, I actually decided to coach. So that was my first step into coaching. I was actually a student assistant for my dad that year. And looking back on it, it's not what I wanted to do, but it turned out to probably be one of the biggest silver linings, like, of my life, is just starting that career and, you know, getting it going early, you know, versus if I would have played, you know, who knows where, you know, where I would have gone from there. But that was kind of a nice springboard and just a chance for me to get my feet wet under somebody that, you know, like my dad, that was really looking out for me and kind of put me in the right situation to have some success early.
Yeah, I just think it's such a lesson in surrendering and not, we can never see the big picture. We think we can try to plan all these things, but we can't. What we can see is a minuscule piece of what is actually going around us and the invisible forces that are kind of shaping our lives. And it's like, maybe you had a great D2 college career and you bounced around Europe a little bit and, you know, your life could have taken a whole different journey, but because of all the work that you put in and the sacrifices and the skill levels, I'm sure your experience just with that work and how much effort it took and the preparation to maximize your potential was something that got Austin to buy in. And he saw that in you, I'm sure, when you first started working him out. When you were growing up, I'm sure your dad, and I know your grandfather was coached, you know, even as a high school, he was a teacher, right?
And a teacher. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good memory. Yeah. Yeah.
Grandpa, what are some things that they shared with you, that they taught you, that they gave to you, maybe some gifts of leadership, some gifts of coaching, of mentoring, that you've been trying to embody yourself as you've gone along this professional journey in the NBA?
Yeah, I think just like leadership by example. You know, like, I was always with my dad, my grandpa. I used to spend my summers in Orlando. That's how close my grandpa and I were, you know, growing up. So just being able to have someone to talk to bounce ideas off of. My grandpa used to come to my high school games, used to come to my college games. So he was a mentor. He was like a father figure. He was an unbelievable person to me, you know, and obviously my dad's my biggest role model. You know, that was a big thing for me, being able to stay local in town, get a chance to play for him in college. My dad played for his dad. So it was really nice, you know, for our family to be able to do that. And that was a cool thing where my grandpa could come down. But I would say just the number one thing that stuck out is just how much, you know, they cared, how much they believed in me, how much they showed me that by, you know, their effort and coming to the games and providing feedback and just always having my best interests in mind. So, you know, those are the type of relationships that, you know, just go such a long way. And, you know, those are the life lasting relationships that are built just from love and from caring about an individual.
100%. I think every single person who's listening to this can apply that in any aspect of their life, professionally, personally, relationships with their kids, coaching, running a sales division, whatever it is. If you lead by example, and you show up and you show up with love, you show up with care, you show up with compassion, it goes so far. And it's just the simple things that make such of an impact. You brought up something that's interesting that I think I have a belief on that some people push back on. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And I believe that when you are in an influential position, when you're a leader, you can, to a certain point, you can instill belief in somebody else through certain things like you brought up, that you talked about. Daniel Coyle calls this in The Talent Code, he calls it ignition, where a statement, a moment, can ignite something in somebody else, ignite a belief, ignite a skill, and ignite an opportunity maybe for them to adopt a belief about themselves. What do you think about that, and how did that show up with your dad and your grandfather?
No doubt. I mean, I think, you know, the game of life is confidence, you know, and if you can be confident, you can succeed in sports and in life. And I think that's where the ignition, the belief, you feel it. You feel it as an individual. You feel it as a person. You know who's in your corner. You know who has your back. It's easy to see. And you feel that. And I think that's a form of love. Like we talked about, it's a form of care. And it's just something that, you know, I think that's why the family bonds are so strong, is you feel it, you know, and that's how I felt with my dad growing up. That's how I felt with my grandpa. And I, you know, that's why, you know, when you ask about, you know, my mentors and role models, that those would be two of the first people to come to mind. But I would just say that what all those attributes give to the individual that's receiving them is just confidence. Confidence that they can succeed in what they want to do. Confidence that they can succeed in life. And that goes a long way. It really does.
What are some really tangible, specific things that somebody can do as a leader to instill that belief? Maybe is there a story that you can share about, I have no idea, maybe you had a bad game and there's a conversation that you had with your dad or your grandfather afterwards, or some example that somebody can take away and say, okay, I can apply this, I can use this now as well in my relationships, whatever those are.
I would just say, like, just following up, you know, continually following up with people, especially when someone goes through a difficult time. You go through a difficult time, you know who's in your corner right away, and you know who maybe you thought might be in your corner, but isn't in your corner. So I think continual following up with people, like, you know, I go back to, even the best of the best lose their confidence. You know, it's not just, you know, you or myself, or, you know, everybody loses confidence. NBA players lose confidence. Elite coaches lose confidence. Like, one guy that I was fortunate enough to work with was Chris Paul. And I remember, you know, one story early on when I first started, I was in Boston, you know, for that first year. And then my second year with the Clippers, we had Chris. And, you know, Chris is Hall of Fame point guard, one of the best to ever do it. And I remember early on working with him, almost having to pull back and realize, like, gosh, like you know, he's lost his confidence a little bit. Like, he needs me, like, who played Division II basketball, to just encourage him. And I think that was a huge, like eye-opening experience for me, is sitting down, you're watching film with Chris, and he's allowing you to coach him, which is one of the first things you have to do with the elite players, is they have to buy into you to allow you to coach them. And once they allow that, then I just remember that the first couple of times that we were together is, hey, what do you see here? Or, gosh, I should have taken that shot. Or, man, like, I just, you know, at that time in the game, like, I just wasn't feeling right. And I think I remember telling my brother, you know, that story, you know, a few years ago. He played college basketball too. And, you know, he was going through a tough time. And I just, you know, I told him that story. And the best of the best lose confidence, but the best of the best are able to bounce back quicker than the average person. Like, that's what separates them, their mentality, their mindset. They're able to snap right back into it. But they lose their confidence, and they need people around them. They value people around them that can elevate their confidence, that can build them back up. And I think that's what a great coach does, is he brings out the best in his players and allows them to perform at their ultimate, you know, ability, as well as the team.
Such a great answer and an insight. I think so many people who don't have access to the kind of guys you've been able to be around think that they just have this unshakable confidence. And one of the definitions of confidence, or a concept around confidence that I got from a guy who I'd consider a mentor of mine kind of from a distance. His name is Josh Linkner. He's an incredible keynote speaker in the corporate space. And he says, I don't have the confidence that every time I get on stage that I'm going to be perfect. I have the confidence to know that if I make a mistake, that I'm going to be able to recover. And I think that's, it's such a different mindset when you approach confidence that way. It takes, in a way, it takes a lot of the pressure off. It's like, I'm not going to be perfect, but I know I can bounce back. I know I can be better. I know I can improve. I know I have these, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things in my toolbox that I can go to. I got these people in my corner. And when you have those tools and strategies and mindsets, and then also couple that with the people that you can keep in your corner, that's what creates that unshakable confidence to be able to always bounce back.
For sure. You summed it up great right there. Yeah, that was good. I agree.
Hey, everybody. Mike Lee here. I know if you're listening to our show, that means you're a bold, driven, and future-focused leader looking to challenge the status quo and get to the next level, which is why I've created a guide that blends the worlds of sports performance psychology with mindfulness on how to lock in and consistently deliver world-class, resilient performance in any arena of business or life. You can grab your copy by heading over to mindshiftlabs.com/performance. That's mindshiftlabs.com/performance. Let's get back to the show. So you mentioned Chris Paul, and you've been around a ton of basketball's elite. What are some of the common traits that you see across the elite players that you've worked with, that you've been around? What are some of like the non-negotiables? Like if you're going to be at an elite level in any industry, you're an artist, an athlete, a CEO, these are the non-negotiables. What are some of these things that athletes are doing?
Yeah, I mean, they stick out right away. I mean, work ethic is first. I think passion sticks out right away. The desire to be great. I think it's just, it's consistent. It's consistent and it's every day. Like, I think that's what sticks out with these guys. It's every day. Like, you name some of the guys that you've talked about. You talk about some of the best players that the Clippers have had, some of the best players that the Celtics have had in their history. And during my time there, it sticks out that they're the hardest workers. And it's not a cliche. Like, it's every day. Like, it's Paul Pierce. It's Kevin Garnett. It's Rondo. It's Garnett getting there early. He's in on the massage table. Then he's in the hot tub. Then he gets stretched for 30 minutes. Then he goes through a 20-minute, like, full sweat pre-practice routine. Then he practices for 2 hours at such an elite level that he's like a maniac. And then after that, he's in the cold tub. He's stretched again. He's icing. So, like, it's a full process, and that's every day. Like, you know, you go through J.J. Redick, who anybody that knows anything about J.J. Redick knows he's a master of routine. And he was one of the guys that I was fortunate enough to work with. And JJ was every day. Like, it didn't have to be 45 minutes or an hour, but like Christmas, he's in there 15, 20 minutes. He's getting his same shots that he's done for his whole career for 17, 18 years. He's going from 5 spots, 10 makes. It's nothing crazy, but it's just like the cumulative effect of building. And then you get to such a level where it just becomes routine. It's just almost like it's maintenance, where you're changing your oil in your car. And that's what these guys are. They're high performance machines practically, and they're just coming in to get maintenance. And that's a large part of the skill work with the elite players during the year, is more maintenance and just making sure they feel good, that, you know, everything feels right. And then they can go and play, you know, that night.
I think that's such an important point about the maintenance aspect of it. And I think the reason I bring it up is, like, you get to a certain, I'm going to take this conversation a completely different place, but at an elite level, you kind of get to this, you get to a certain place where it's like, you have to work incredibly hard just to make that extra 0.1% improvement, 0.2% improvement. And I worked with a kid I think it was after sophomore year in college, And he's now, his name is Matt Thomas. He now plays for the Toronto Raptors. I'm sure, I think I actually, you sent him some game film back when he was in college or something.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And I was talking to Matt about like what he needed to do, improve, and his goals for the offseason, what he wanted to accomplish next year. And we started talking about how much work he's putting in. And it's like, I asked him, I was like, Matt, for you to improve as a shooter next year, do you think it's going to be dependent on whether or not you go out and you make 1,000 three-pointers during the summer? When you miss a shot in a game, is it because you haven't got enough reps in? Is it because you haven't put enough work in? And he's like, no, it's because, his answer was somewhere along the lines of, it's because I'm not completely locked in the moment. And it didn't have to do with my physical repetition. It had to do with my mental repetition. How am I preparing my mind to be able to maximize that moment when I'm getting that open look, or they're running an action for me, or whatever it is? And is there anything that you did as a player development coach where you're working with players on their mind beyond their body? Obviously, I know you're not doing a whole lot of stuff, physical conditioning, but that you're doing to intentionally train players' minds. And the reason I bring this up is I think not as much, any people are starting to be open to this, but I think there's, for a long time, focus was almost just an expectation. It wasn't something that we thought that we could train. It was just, yelled at players to focus if they weren't focusing, or if they missed an open look or whatever, maybe they blew a layup or something. And the most common approach to coaches is yell at a kid to focus. So like, but now there's scientifically proven through tons of different studies that we can improve these through certain exercises. And so the long-winded path to this question is really, is there anything that you did as a coach to help players prepare more mentally versus, because when you get to that elite level, there's only so much you can do from a physical standpoint, especially.
I think you're right on the money with the focus. You know, as far as coaches, I would say that's an area we're probably behind in, is improving focus. So like how I would answer that question, like some of the things that I would say there is, I think you got to go back to the shot itself, right? So you're breaking down the shot itself, and then you're thinking, okay, how can I put, let's just use Matt Thomas, in the best mental state to make that shot? Like, what can I do as a player development coach, as an assistant coach, that's within my realm of knowledge and expertise? And for me, it's how many repetitions has he gotten, right? You talked about that would be physical, right? Has he taken that shot from that spot at that speed with everything on the line before, right, in his previous career? And how can you build confidence in him to where he can step up and knock that shot down in a game at night? And there's a few things that go into that. Like, one, I think, is just seeing like where his mental state is. Like, is he a guy that can like get to the next play, right? Or is he a guy that kind of gets stuck in the past? And, you know, that's something you have to work through. Has he put in the time, the physical part, to be able to have the confidence to make that shot? And then I think the last part is just, is he like, what type of player is he? Like, is he a guy that is supposed to be taking that shot? Like, does he know who he is as a player? And all those factors, I think, go into like when you're working with him individually, that you're able to say the right things to him and just try to get him in the right mindset heading into the game, I think are all important. So combining the physical part with the mental part for me would be more video, like showing him the action. And then just also taking like Doc's feedback of like the other point I was making is, does Doc want him in that situation, or whoever, Brad Stevens, or like, is he doing what Doc wants? Because that's a big part of my job, is making sure that the player's performing up to the coach's expectation as well.
Yeah, you brought up a phrase or concept that is pretty common in the basketball space called next play.
Yeah.
What does that exactly mean? Can you unpack that a little bit? Yeah. And then how we can maybe apply that beyond basketball. I think it's something that everybody can apply. And I think it's a simple concept, but that doesn't mean it's easy to consistently implement.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a concept that I learned from Doc early on, and he says it all the time. And it can apply to any situation in basketball. Like we were just talking about Matt Thomas, he's coming off, he misses a few shots. You know, we've all seen it. He gets down, you know, his hands go on his knees. He's frustrated. He's shaking his head. He doesn't get back on defense. And if you can audibly hear Doc on some of the TNT broadcasts, next play, get back, next play. You know, and you could go down the list of, you know, you miss a block out, your guy gets a rebound, you don't get back in transition, and you just see the body language immediately, shoulder slump. And that's where, you know, Doc, you can verbally hear him, just next play, get to the next play. Like, don't let the past affect the next play. Like, win the next play. Don't let, you know, the prior thing just mess up the next play. And then all of a sudden it's like a rolling rock down a hill. And you know, you play one of the worst games of your career because you can't get past your own mental block. Everybody makes mistakes. That's the game. It's a sport. But the best of the best are able to quickly adapt to the next play and move past their mistake. And I think you see that across sports and like you said, in life, you know, you catch a bad break. I mean, how are you going to handle it? Like, are you going to move forward? Are you going to sulk? Are you going to, like my dad always says, take the bull by the horns and then make something happen. Create your future, you know, and I think that can apply to sports and life too. It's just a great phrase.
Yeah, it really is. And it really speaks to the compound effect from the standpoint of, you talked about one of the key traits of consistency, or key traits of being an elite performer, is consistency, right? And this also applies to the things that are not going your way, right? And your inactions, or your, like you brought up body language, right? The guy who is like Steph Curry didn't end up NBA MVP overnight. And the guy who is sitting in prison right now, and he's been there for the past 10 years, didn't end up there overnight. It was a series of choices that were made consistently over the course of time. Now, in certain cases, can the wrong thing happen at the wrong time to the wrong person, and they get stuck in incredibly unfavorable, not fair, unjust circumstances? 100% can that happen. But for the majority of what we're talking about in a general level, right? It is the consistency. It's like, how are you showing up every single day? What's the work that you're putting in every single day? Kevin Garnett is a guy that you said exemplified that. And I know there's a story that I love, and I don't know if I heard it from you or maybe from Kevin Eastman about Kevin Garnett not getting off the practice court. It might have been playoff time. I don't remember. But it's a story that exemplifies just the commitment and the level of intensity and focus that it takes to maximize your potential. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah. So just, you know, that's one of my favorites. And that was a story I've heard Eastman tell as well. And I've told it a few times. But yeah, so that was in my first season. So we were in Italy for training camp, and this was my first season in the NBA. I'm coming from UCF, and I'm with the team in training camp, and I'm on the sideline, and the Celtics are practicing. Now, at this point, KG was probably year 14, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in that range. So he was older in his career. Doc was trying to, you know, routine maintenance. It's training camp. We're playing, you know, local teams. So they're practicing. This is like day three or four. So the first couple of days are walkthroughs, you know, putting in sets, not doing a ton of live. So I think we get to about day three. We start playing live for the first time, 5-on-5. Now, we're in a gym in Italy, and if you could just picture like three courts, like one court in the middle, the Celtics are practicing. There's a court to the left, and that's like where the water bottles are and like the bleachers. And that's like every time a player comes out, he goes to the left. And then there's like a far court, like on the right, and no one's on the far court. So we start practicing, you know, 5-7 minutes. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, whistle blows, it's Doc, hey, you know, get some water. Okay, they come back, we play another 3-4 minutes. And then I'm kind of standing next to Doc, and he wasn't talking to me, but he just, you know, I think it might have been Eastman. And he said, hey, you know, let's get KG out of there. So he blows the whistle, takes KG out. So, you know, KG has a couple choice words that he says back. And it's nothing disrespectful with KG. You have to understand and who he is, and just the competitor, the maniacal competitor that he is. So, you know, like the other guys that Doc just substituted out, Rondo, Pierce, they go to the left side, they start getting water, and I'm watching Garnett, and Garnett goes to the far court, and he's on the right side. He's like, I shouldn't be taken out. So play resumes, and at the time, it was Darko Milicic that subbed in for him. So KG's on the sideline on the far court, Celtics start practicing again, and KG starts like running on the sideline. I'm like, what's he doing? Like, what? Why is he running? So I start to like look at Darko, and he's mimicking Darko Milicic, exact movements. So like Darko gets a rebound, like KG gets like an invisible rebound, makes the outlet pass, and then Darko sprints the floor, like gets in the paint, KG sprints the floor, like invisible ducking, like trying to catch the pass. And what he was doing was he basically like, he refused to come out of the game. So he was just playing his own game by himself, 30 feet away from the main court, on the, all by himself on the court, and he's mimicking every movement. And he did that every single time, Mike, that he came out during that year, that at least that I was there. I was there in the beginning and at the end of the year. And every single practice that I witnessed, KG did that. And he would either mimic the player or he would come out and he would run suicides. So it's just like I said before, maniacal is KG, and just relentless competitor, relentless. And that was just like, what an example for like a young player coming into a Celtics organization and just saying like, hey, like what's this culture like? And then you see that from your best player, and probably one of the best probably the best power forward to ever play, or definitely in the running for it. And you see his work ethic, his commitment to the game, his desire to be great. So that was eye-opening for me, and probably one of my favorite stories, in the last 8 years.
I didn't know that he did that throughout the year. I thought it was just a one-time thing.
It got to the point where we couldn't practice because KG needed breaks. You know, he's playing 35, 37 minutes a night. This is 2010. So they won the title in 08. Actually, you know, this was a little bit later. They went to the finals in 2010. So this was my first year, would have been 2012. So yeah, I mean, it's in, there's so many KG stories I could tell. I mean, it's just, he was a unique individual.
I can imagine. You're talking about
like another one. I'll tell you another one real quick. Like, so he used to have this saying, like, let me see if I can get it right. Game day starts when you first wake up, he used to always say. And so game day starts when you first wake up, he would yell it like when he came in the locker room, like all the young guys, and no distractions. And so like if anybody would text or call, like no distractions, it's game day. And basically like what he was saying is he was setting up his mental state where nobody could bother him on a game day. Like it was all focus. If we were playing the 76ers that night, if we were playing the Rockets, the Timberwolves, that was the only focus. And that was all he wanted to hear about all day. So shoot around, you know, he's completely locked in, no distractions. He's not a guy that's going to be laughing, joking, shooting half court shots. Like that's not KG. Like shoot around, he would have a towel. You've seen the pictures, seen the videos, towel, full sweat, and he's in a walkthrough. Like we're doing nothing live. So it's just that level of commitment that made him so great, as long as his athletic attributes and stuff, but his mentality and his mindset is why he's a Hall of Famer.
That's amazing. I'm gonna shift gears here as we wrap this up. Talk a little bit more about leadership. You know, throughout the journey of a season, every team faces tons of adversity. And that's one of the fulfilling things about the journey of the season, but it's also adversity, right? And it's something that we are all facing right now in one way, shape, or another, is this uncertainty and the adversity and the change and the disruption and chaos in our lives. Is there anything that you learned from Doc, or maybe that you've done in the past that you feel would help other leaders help their people move through this period that we're going through?
I think, you know, obviously Doc's, I mean, just he's turned into not just one of the best leaders in basketball, but he's turned into like a national leader. It's pretty incredible. And I feel really fortunate to get a chance to have had a chance to spend 8 years with him. I think one thing that's amazing with Doc is, you know, this is Doc's 30th year coaching, playing. He's been doing it a long time. And for Doc to stay as even keeled as he is, like, think about the ups, the downs, that he's had over the course of his career. And one of my favorite sayings, and he says it all the time, is just, you got to keep hope alive. You got to keep hope alive. He'll walk out of the building, got to keep hope alive. Tough loss, got to keep hope alive. And I think that's one thing that applies to your question is you gotta be optimistic. You know, you gotta be able to not have like a pessimistic mindset where a challenge or something happens, adversity strikes, and you just roll up. You gotta be able to keep fighting, to keep that hope alive, keep light at the end of the tunnel, find something to fight for, and just put the work in. Put the work in every day. We've talked about the compounding effects, like you use the NBA examples, but put the work in, keep hope alive, and you can achieve anything you want to.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the power of vision and purpose, right? We're not going to be able to keep hope alive or be able to stay connected to our energy and come with passion if we don't stay connected to our purpose. We don't see that vision unfolding and have a concrete, vivid visualization of what we're trying to bring to life. Otherwise, we are going to feel empty. We are going to feel hopeless. We are going to feel like our energy is fragmented. And having that vision and purpose is so important to be able to move through adversity. And I think that's, you know, every great coach, like at the beginning of the year, you're setting out exactly what your vision is for the season. And through adversity, that vision is something you can always come back to. You brought up one thing about Doc, that he carries himself with so much poise. And it's something that I see in you. You always carry yourself with calm and poise and collectedness. Where does that come from? Is there anything you do to practice that, to intentionally set your day up to show up like that? Because that's something that I see in you and that I admire in you as a person, as a leader, as a coach.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Mike. Yeah, I think I just try to live with an optimist mindset, you know, and I think that gets me through a lot of things. And I have down days too. You know, like I try to stay as positive as I can, but I have ups and downs, just like everybody else. But I think what I try to do is just realize that adversity is short term, right? It's your mentality that's gonna keep you pushing. And I've been fortunate to be around some really good, thoughtful minds, some people, you know, that are really good thought leaders that have kind of given me a tremendous amount of knowledge that's helped me. And I just try to apply that. Like I try to apply that in my life. I try to take the lessons and I try not to just, you know, read the lessons. I try to apply it as much as I can. And I think that it works for me. I think you got to find what works for you and what fits your lifestyle and your, you know, preference in how you live. But it works for me, you know, and I would just encourage people just to every day just wake up and just be excited about something. And if you have passion, like, and if you are excited about something every day, then you can overcome short-term obstacles. Like you talked about the goal at the end. And even if you don't have a goal, just to have something that wakes you up in the morning, that excites you. And it just gives you the energy to be able to fight through short-term adversity, you know, in my opinion. And for me, it's always been basketball. Like that's what drives me. That's what wakes me up in the morning. I get excited about helping our team. I get excited about helping our players. And it's what gives me the juice and the fire to keep going and to bounce back. And then if you multiply my life example by about 1,000, maybe 2,000, then you have Doc Rivers. And that's what's truly incredible is his poise and how he's able to stay calm under pressure. And that's why he's Doc Rivers, you know. And I think for me, being able to be around people like him, being able to be around people like Ty Lue, like Kevin Eastman, you know, down the list has really been beneficial for me to take some of their lessons and how they conduct themselves and lead by example and try to apply it, you know, in my life.
That's a great spot to wrap it up. Kind of where we started, greatest leaders lead by example, no question about it. And it's the simple things. Showing up for yourself so you can demonstrate that for others. JP, thanks for jumping on today. If people want to connect with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, on Twitter, Coach JP Clark. That's probably where I am the most. Try to share as much basketball content as I can. But yeah, be happy to connect with anyone.
Awesome, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. This was great. I enjoyed it.
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking the time to listen to the show today. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd greatly appreciate a 5-star rating on iTunes because it's how we spread the word about the show. Also, remember to grab your copy of Locked In, a digital guide on how to unlock world-class resilient performance by heading over to mindshiftlabs.com/performance. That's mindshiftlabs.com/performance. We'll see you next week. I'm always a winner. Even if I fall, I can still get bigger. The definition of a champion. Definition of a champion. No. Never for titles, but for survival. The champion. A team role players, even with...